Welcome to SportsWise, a podcast about sports and the law with your host, me, Gabe Feldman, director of the Tulane Sports Law Program and co-director of the Tulane Center for Sport. On this very special emergency college sports episode, I'm joined by Mike McCann, legal analyst and senior sports legal reporter at Sportico and professor at University of New Hampshire Law School, and also Andrew Brandt, executive director of the Morad Center for Sports Law and the host of the Business of Sports podcast. They join to break down the big news in college sports today. The letter from Charlie Baker, president of the NCAA, proposing significant changes to the current college athlete compensation model. What does it mean? Why are they doing it? Where does it go from here? And who is Big Dom? All that and more coming up. Here we go. Before I bring on Mike and Andrew, I want to set the table for our conversation. I'm recording this on the evening of Tuesday, December 5th, and earlier today, NCAA President Charlie Baker set forth a proposal that would significantly change college sports as we know it. Let me talk about two sets of changes. First, that would make it possible for all Division I colleges and university to offer college athletes any level of what they're calling enhanced educational benefits they deem appropriate. Under the current system, and this is as a result of the Supreme Court decision in Alston, universities can offer in-kind educational benefits without any limit. So that means musical instruments, science equipment, laptops, anything that is related to education they can currently offer. But if they want to offer cash awards related to education, so academic awards, that right now is limited to about $5,980. This proposal would say that schools can give athletes education-related money at any level they deem appropriate. Now, presumably it would have to be related somehow to their education, but the NCAA has said there is no restriction on how they can use the money. Significant change there, allowing schools right off the bat to offer more money, regardless of what sport they play and regardless of what particular conference or school you're in, as long as you're in Division I. The second is that any Division I school at their choice can enter into name, image, and likeness licensing agreements with their college athletes. Again, this is a big change because under the current rules, although college athletes can receive compensation for their name, image, and likeness, this compensation has to come from third parties. And what we've seen is collectives and others pop up to either facilitate these deals or to pay these athletes directly for their NIL deals. This would now open the door for the schools themselves to be involved with and to pay athletes for NIL deals. Those are, again, major changes. They've been foreshadowed for a while, something that many have been pushing for a while, but this is the first time that the NCAA itself has proposed these two changes. The other big set of changes is that a subdivision made up of institutions with the highest resources to invest in their college athletes would be required to do two things. Okay, so this is again a subdivision of Division I, what we right now maybe call the Power Two or some format variation on the Power Two. That within the framework of Title IX, and again, all of this has to be within the framework of Title IX, but within the framework of Title IX, they could invest at least $30,000 per year into an enhanced educational trust fund for at least half of the institution's eligible college athletes. Okay, so at least $30,000 per year. So it could be beyond that, but it has to be at least $30,000 into a trust fund. Doesn't seem to be any limitation on when the athletes can get access to that money or what triggers access to that money. The only other qualifier is that they have to give that $30,000 per year to at least half of college athletes at that institution. And it has to comply with Title IX. So if you're giving the football players each $30,000, you have to give an equitable amount to female athletes. If you're giving them $100,000 each, equitable amount to female athletes. So you can see that would be a significant amount of money that schools could set aside for both male and female athletes. And then the second part for this new subdivision is that the schools would commit to work with their peer institutions in this subdivision to create rules that may differ from the rules in place for the rest of Division I. And those rules could include a wide range of policies, such as scholarship commitment, roster size, recruitment, transfers, or NIL. So this subdivision could create their own rules that are even more permissive, that allow perhaps pay for play, pay for recruitment, more transfer flexibility, greater number of scholarships. Who knows? But this would give that subdivision the freedom, the autonomy. So I'm thinking about the autonomy five right now, but it's giving me greater autonomy to create different rules. Okay. Why are they doing this? Lots of reasons. And Mike and Andrew and I will talk about that in a minute. But in the letter, in the proposal, the NCAA says that, among other things, that this subdivision and these new rules will more accurately reflect the scale and the operating model of these higher resourced schools and allow them to spend more money because they have more money. It would also give colleges and universities that may not have those same resources or don't have the same willingness or desire to spend that money on athletics to go in a different direction and not have to invest the same money as the schools in that other subdivision would and not be expected to compete necessarily on the same playing field, both literally and figuratively, as those other schools. And then also would keep everyone within that big tent, would maintain NCAA national championships across all sports other than football, which would still be controlled by a college football playoff or some other entity. And would also, I think without question, again, we'll get into this more in a minute, provide a roadmap for Congress to say, we think this is a plan we can actually buy into and use as a basis for legislation that would give the NCAA all sorts of legal protections under antitrust law and employment law that they've been looking for in the past. Those are the basics. There is a lot to discuss. There are a lot of unknowns. This is the very early days of the story, but I want to bring Mike and Andrew on so we could break down things at this preliminary stage. And then obviously we will talk about this a lot more, but now on to the conversation with Mike and Andrew. Welcome back to the podcast, Mike and Andrew. Thank you for being on.
Always a pleasure, Gabe.
Great to be on.
The pause in saying anything makes me think otherwise, but let's get right into it. My first question is, the NCAA, at least in the last 5 years or so, has been making a lot of decisions based on legal exposure. And I think it's fair to say a lot of the choices they've made have been pushed by their lawyers, maybe so more so than the business people. What do we think about this decision? What's primarily driving this decision in your mind? Is it primarily a legal decision, primarily a business decision? It's probably some of both, but what do you think is the overriding push here? And what are they truly, do we think, again, primarily trying to accomplish?
I'll jump in. I'm really anxious to hear what Mike says as well. I just think all three of us have been talking about this for years now, that antitrust lawsuits have been circling, and there's a whole bevy of them from different sources now. And in light of the Judge Kavanaugh concurrence in the Alston case, there's just been so much swirling about the NCAA and antitrust. And I think you guys agree, they just threw up their hands after Alston on a whole preparation for NIL to begin with on July 1, 2021, and abdicated responsibility. And this has led to where we are now, where they're seeking legislation, they're trying to avoid these lawsuits and all of the ramifications that could come, especially the class action with House. And this is a way to try to preempt it all, a way to try to get in front of it with their own proposal. On the business side, it seems like maybe this could head off a bigger problem of Congress telling them what to do, of lawsuits, of where it goes beyond this. I'm not sure, and Mike and Gabe can jump in and answer this, is where is the end game with this? Is this something for Congress to adopt? Is this something for all the presidents to approve and then see where it goes? Is this something to head off litigation? But clearly, they're trying to preemptively strike against two things in my mind. One is antitrust lawsuits, and two, the problem that they've encountered the last 2 years with these collectives taking control of NIL away from them. That's just my initial reaction. I'd love to hear Mike.
Yeah, those are great points, Andrew. And just to build on them, I would say a couple things. One is, I think it's too late for the NCAA to try to extinguish some of the legal issues that have been raised in the litigation and also before the NLRB. And specifically, the House case involves billions of dollars in damages from prior TV broadcasts. So even if the NCAA tomorrow changes all of its rules and shares money with athletes, there's still the past payments, right? For all the athletes that arguably should have been paid and weren't. And similarly, in Johnson v. NCAA, we're talking about another massive damages class involving athletes that will say we should have been paid up to this date. So I think the NCAA is trying, as Andrew said, to preempt maybe future litigation. But I think they should have done this before. I think the reality is we're too far into the game. And we know that the lawyers involved in these cases are really good, and they're going to push to get some sort of settlement that's pretty massive if the NCAA is going to be open to settling. And also, the NLRB matters aren't extinguished by this announcement because the NCAA is not calling them employees. Clearly, there's a push for employee recognition that doesn't get addressed by this. So I feel like the NCAA has moved in a direction, but it doesn't address what's already on its plate. And it might preempt other litigation.
Right.
I don't think it cures what it has. And Andrew, you mentioned going to Congress. You're right. They're constantly going to Congress. It's been 5 years of lobbying, and not one bill has made it to the floor out of committee. And I don't know. I feel so much of this process, the legislative side, is let's get a big splash on ESPN, an article, or Yahoo, or whatever, and then that's it. Then it goes away because there's 50,000 more important issues that are taking up time in Congress. So I imagine it falls into that pattern a little bit, but I don't know. It's a step of innovation, but I think the timeline isn't such that the NCAA is really in control of it.
Yeah.
Maybe you can answer this too, Gabe. So they put out this. Is the goal is to codify this somewhere? Codify it with Congress or with, like, how does this become preemptive is my question.
Yeah. So on the preemptive part, Mike, I agree with you. I think this is a little bit like getting your flu shot after you already start to have flu symptoms. It's a great idea, but if you'd thought about it 2 months earlier, it would have been more effective. But I think that this is a play by the NCAA. I think two things. One is Charlie Baker had to do something. This is not as if this were his regime for 10 years and he's just going to play it out and then be done. He was brought in and wanted to come in to make a difference, to make a change. And so he had to do something different than his predecessors. And I think this is different coming forward with an actual plan. And I think two, again, my guess is that he's now going to present this to Congress and say, Congress, you've been saying we need a plan before we're willing to give you an antitrust exemption, before we're willing to say that college athletes are not employees. We're not just going to give you a blanket immunity from all laws. And now that this is at least a framework to say to the Republicans and the Democrats, look, you don't have to worry about your competing bills. We have it. This is what you can do. Sign on to it. Give us the antitrust exemption minus this stuff. Say that they're not employees, and then you can make it the Booker, Blumenthal, Moran, everybody else bill, and everybody can get Cruz and everybody else can take credit for it. But I think that if they didn't do something like this, then they were just going to keep losing their lawsuits or eventually lose their lawsuits and completely lose control, and Charlie Baker would be president of something that didn't have much beneath it. So I don't know that they had much other choice. And I think, as we've all said, the only surprising thing to me is that this didn't happen 5 years ago or 3 years ago or 2 years ago. And then in terms of the lawsuits, Mike, I think you're right. What they could do, though, is to get the protection from Congress going forward and then settle the cases. So say we'll settle all of it. We'll pay a bunch of money in damages, but we can calculate that into the cost of doing business going forward. And now we know what our costs are going to be going forward because we can cap them. which is not something they feel like they can do now. Or they can just say, you know what, Congress will do it. They'll be like Joe Boo in Major League. You're not going to help me. I'll do it myself. We'll just put the rules in place. And then if we get sued, we get sued. But at least we have, and Mike, you mentioned this in your article today, at least we have a better argument that these are legal under antitrust law because they're more reasonable. They're not as broad. They're not these blanket restrictions. And so better off to fight a battle you think you might win as opposed to these battles that they almost know they're going to lose going into it. So that's...
I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I think the settlement piece is interesting as a strategy. Certainly you would think it would buy goodwill in Congress if they settle these cases, right? I don't know how realistic it is that they're going to settle, but I would imagine members of Congress would find that to be a positive factor for the NCAA in considering legislation for the legal standards going forward.
Yeah, I think it's they want stability, and they want to know that their teams are still going to be playing on Saturday, and Alabama wants to know that its team is still going to be at the top of the heap, and this allows them to still be at the top of the heap. Okay, go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of arrows coming in at the NCAA, as we all know, including over this FSU decision the past couple of days. Yep. And that's not really NCAA even, that's CFP. But one of the issues are, how do we get these athletes compensated? The issues are, how do we deal with Title IX? The issues are, we've got these boosters taking control of our programs, and what was meant to be this sort of innocent NIL where you're doing shout outs on Instagram and you're getting free product and you're getting $5,000 for an appearance. Now you get $50,000 just to show up and do a handshake. They've got to get control of that. So I'm just reading between the lines. It looks to me like this proposal is lawyers and business people coming together and saying, okay, let's put it all in there and throw it all against the wall and see what comes out of this. We solve Title IX, we solve the collectives, we solve some kind of pay issue and see where it goes. I guess that's what I'm getting at, this, how they put this thing together.
Can I jump? It's interesting, Andrew. I think you're right. They give the impression that it's all out of control. If I'm a member of Congress, I'm going to say, why didn't you do something about it? Why didn't you regulate it? Alston case, as we've talked about, it involved an issue not at issue with NIL or anything. It involved money for education-related expenses. We don't know how the Supreme Court would have looked at NIL in that context. I think if anything, we might suspect they'd be more sympathetic to the NCAA in regulating it than something about literally education costs. And I feel like the NCAA lost goodwill by basically doing nothing, by saying, oh, this is too hard, we don't want to get sued. That's just like...
Yeah.
Pathetic, really, if you think about it. It's really not a good standpoint. And maybe that's going to change, and we'll see. But I also think it's interesting the timing of this, right? We're now December 2023. There is a, as we know, quite the election coming up. It's going to suck up a lot of air in Congress. A lot of members are going to go back to their districts. This is going to be it seems like a pretty closely contested federal election at the presidential level, and there will be similarly competitive races on the state level. I don't know. The timing of this is a little curious. Is it too late? Is this something where it doesn't really get looked at until 2025? I don't know.
Yeah, you didn't even mention a couple wars going on. It's like,
right.
Where on the pecking order is, you mentioned it, both you guys, how, yeah, Booker and Cruz and Blumenthal and Moran and Manchin, everybody's jumping in, right? It's bipartisan, very popular to support college athletes. And now the stuff in Florida over Florida State. But what does that mean? What does that mean in terms of passage, in terms of getting in front of all the other issues that are on their plate? And you're right, Mike, we're going into a holiday season to begin with. It's a long horse race for this bill.
So what do we think in terms of what happens next? And we obviously don't know. Division I Council, this is just a proposal. They still have to actually vote on it and approve it and then figure out how to implement it and the timing and how that works with the existing TV deals. And if this is going to lead to another conference realignment, how does it work with conference television deals that are going to go out into the 2030s? So there are the implementation issues, but let's just put those aside for sake of this brief discussion. where do we think this leads to for the future of college sports? Because there's kind of two models on the extremes. One is the status quo, everybody stays where they are. And the other is we have this break off of the power two or the top 40, 50 schools and play football and maybe leave the NCAA completely. Where do we think this, does this bring us closer to keeping everyone within the big tent or closer to having a breakaway and a semi-pro or another pro league forming?
Is there, not to challenge the choice of answers, but I would say there's sort of option three or C, which is the NCAA still in the picture, but there is a break off of the power conferences and they have more autonomy. I don't think the NCAA goes away in that equation. I think it remains involved and there's still the basketball tournament and other things. At least me, I'm curious what you both think. I think we move in that direction, that we get to quasi-pro leagues, but the NCAA is a partner and today they voice that they're okay with that, basically.
I think that's right. I think we've been heading for this for a long time, right? We have that upper level of college football and basketball, and then we have everything else. And is the NCAA suited to handle that upper level? Maybe not. Maybe that really is, let's put it bluntly, that's professional. At some level, it's the minor leagues for the NBA and NFL. As for the other 90% of college athletics, maybe the NCAA does serve the right purpose for that. I think what we're dealing with here is, and we haven't talked about the specifics of this proposal monetarily, they're talking about $30,000. That's great for non-revenue athletes. That's great for a lot of sports, but that's not great compared to what's going on, as we all know, with what these guys are getting paid through collectives, through NIL, through packages, whatever it may be. So fitting that in the box is going to be tough as well.
Yeah, and Mike, I agree with both of you. I was just posting those as extremes. I do think we end up somewhere in the middle. But let me ask it a slightly different way. In 5 years or 10 years, is USC football playing Arkansas State football? Or are they just USC playing against the other 25 or 30 or 40 schools and then everybody else plays each other?
I think they're playing the top schools. I think that they're basically a pro league of 25, 30 teams, and who's in it remains to be seen. But I think they're going to be in their own world, and it's going to be like the NFL with the AFC and NFC. And look, there's smart business people that will figure out how to market that, how to keep fans, how to grow the fan base. I don't know. That's how I see it.
Andrew, what do you think?
All right. I'm asking you guys this question. Does the NCAA
No. I asked you the question. You can't turn around and ask me the question.
I host a podcast. What? Does the NCAA want this? Does the NCAA want to regulate USC and Alabama and Michigan and Kentucky and Kansas basketball? They don't want to. So what are we really talking about here? Do they want to limit Alabama football players to $30,000? Or do they just want to do that for the other 90%?
I think they're trying to come up with some cost certainty for, as you mentioned, Andrew, that if you're paying the football players $30,000, you got to pay the others too. You got to pay some of the others money as well to comply with Title IX. And I imagine there are other considerations that are important. It starts to get expensive and complicated, but hey, it's not like anyone's going broke with these TV deals, and coaches are making a lot of money. So it's hard to, the timing of all of this is, I mean, it seems huge, the money, but maybe it's not that huge.
Yeah. I still think it's a play just to keep as close as they possibly can to the status quo, which means being able to limit all the other compensation. Cause if they only have to end up paying $30,000 or $50,000 or $60,000, but an education trust fund as opposed to straight salary, and then they're helping them with NIL deals and maybe licensing their rights for commercials, that's a drop in the bucket compared to revenue sharing of TV deals and straight payment and what an open market would give. So I to me, that's why they're doing this. So I think they do want to continue regulating Alabama and USC and UCLA and whoever else ends up in that conference, and don't want it to be a complete open market. And they don't seem to want them to be employees, even though I think that's a mistake. I think that's probably their best bet, is having them unionize, and then they don't have to worry about getting Congress to step in.
then you got a CBA, right? Then you
right.
you have a CBA.
Then you would have immunization from antitrust.
Right. And then you wouldn't have to worry about all these attacks. And again, we've talked about this, I think all of us, that I don't think that union would be particularly strong given that they have such brief careers. But again, that's a model. This is another model, is trying to give them some rights so that Congress will step in and say, all right, you're being fair. Now we'll protect you from them trying to push for more rights. Or maybe this is just cracking the door open. And once you open the door open a little bit, then there's no way to close it. And then you start paying them a little bit, and then there's no limit on it. You can pay them. You have to pay them whatever you want. And Mike, you just noted this in your article again today, that this might give an out to the non-power two to say, look, what we're doing is different. So treat us differently. Yeah. And our athletes are not employees, they're students. And we should be able to continue to restrict their compensation and put in transfer restrictions and everything else. And so that's the true college sports. And yeah, we have this weird quasi-professional, quasi-college over there, but at least it removes Villanova football from the crosshairs. No offense to Villanova football, but just objectively in a different conference.
Yeah, but I think that to say they're not going to be lawsuits, we just talked about collective bargaining. They're not going to be collectively bargained. Let's assume that. And then it's not like the next Caleb Williams says, okay, $30,000. He can say, "What? Wait a minute. I'm going to make $2 million. So where do I fit?" And if he can't make $2 million and he can only make $30,000, there's going to be much more than a handful of these players based on what we've seen the past couple of years. And if collectives are out and a booster wants to get money to players somehow.
That's why I think they have to get the antitrust exemption so that they can say, we'll give them the 30 or the 50 or the 100, but we're allowed to not give them any more than that. It's also interesting. I don't know what happens to collectives. Everyone's assuming collectives will go away because the schools can pay. But if the collectives can pay them $6 million without having to worry about it being in an educational fund and without worrying about Title IX, they're going to give the $6 million. And so it'll just be on top of what the schools are able to do. So I don't think that if this is trying to end collectives, I don't think this is going to do that. And the boosters will always find a way to send money to the athletes.
Boosters, as the three of us know, have been around long before us, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, the notion that collectives is the current iteration of them. But they've been there forever, and they'll continue to find ways to get money to recruits. And I don't think the NCAA, this is one way of trying to limit the role of collectives, but the underlying functions of collectives, I don't think will be going away anytime soon.
It's also, I think, a way to provide gender equity, to say, look, the collectives are spending most of the money on male athletes. This is a way to fix it. What Congress is trying to do is maybe bring the collectives into Title IX, but obviously the NCAA can't do that by themselves.
Can I mention what this conversation is getting at? It's super complicated, right? There's so many levers to this. And that's why I'm skeptical of Congress, because there's a trust exemption, Title IX, some sort of salary cap. Even NIL itself is tricky because there's no federal right of publicity. So we're now going to have state NIL laws that could potentially conflict with, there's going to be a federal NIL law that maybe conflicts with state rights of publicity. There's a lot of pieces to this that are complicated and that don't always interact so well. I don't know. Maybe they'll get some big bill and they'll rush to pass it because they'll feel like it's good before the election. But I don't know. This is complicated.
Yeah. To echo what Mike just said, is there's one thing to pass a bill or to codify what we're talking about. Another thing is to administer it and regulate it. I think in one of these bills, maybe it is the Blumenthal-Booker bill, there's some kind of language for a commission or a blue ribbon panel, maybe people like us, to administer this and figure out fair market value, which the NCAA at one point was going to do with NIL and stop doing that. But as you point out, there's so many tentacles to this because, getting back to our original point, the NCAA threw up their hands. It was 2 years, I was part of a Big East conference working with Val Ackerman on guardrails and proposing what you could do with logos or without logos and camps and what you could do on campus and not on campus. And it just died once Alston happened.
Yep.
They just threw up their hands.
All right. Last quick point, because I know you guys have to go. One thing, Mike, you mentioned a Big Bill, which made me think of Big Dom, but that's just either here.
I know.
Yeah. What's Big Dom? I figured you would. But so putting aside Big Bill and Big Dom, what's your prediction for what happens next? What's the next big domino or piece to fall? And I'm going to write these down. And every time I have you guys on, I'm going to check to see who's been the most accurate. And then we'll be able to celebrate after a couple of years, who's the best predictor of unpredictable things. So Mike, you look like you're ready to jump in. What's the next thing to happen? What's going to happen?
I mean, it's a sequence of these things. It's tough to predict, but
but
we know that Dartmouth College, there will be a ruling from the regional board in Boston. We know that we're waiting on a Third Circuit ruling in Johnson v. NCAA. We know that the Ninth Circuit will consider an interlocutory appeal petition by the NCAA in the House case. Those are all things we know will happen, presumably in the next month or two. I'm guessing. And I think that one of those things or multiple of those things will happen before we see any real action at the NCAA level. There's this proposal, but it's December. We're now in December. Holiday seasons are coming up. Everything shuts down from like mid-December to early January, and Congress isn't going to be doing much. I think we'll see things outside the NCAA's control. And it's interesting, we talk about, you mentioned the process of getting this actually approved. We remember the NCAA's NIL proposal, which was sitting there for like 2 years and ultimately didn't go anywhere. And I'm not saying it's going to happen here, but this is a slow-moving entity now under a new leadership. I almost called him Governor Baker because I'm from Massachusetts, but he's practical, and I think he gets things done, but he's not really controlling it either. He can only play only so much of a role. So I think the other things that I mentioned will happen before we see anything.
But which one? You have to pick one. You can't list them all.
Okay. Johnson v. NCAA. We'll get something from them.
Okay. Andrew?
I think is our theme that this proposal we convened to talk about is really addressing only the future, not the past. I think the NCAA will address the past. I just think maybe it's this House case where there becomes this global settlement of this pending class action for past media revenues in addition to NIL revenues. Of course, the NCAA doesn't want to pay out billions, but they're going to pay out something eventually. I guess I'll be a bold predictor and say we will have some kind of settlement. And I guess I'd handicap that lawsuit among the others in terms of what would happen, because they're not stupid, right? They understand what they're presenting is proactive, not retrospective, and they've got to deal with that. I think Baker, they know they have to deal with it.
I'm going to join Mike. I think it's going to be a Johnson case decision. I think we're going to get it. This is the week of December 5th. I think we're going to get it this week. I think we might get it before people listen to this podcast. I've been saying this for a month now. So eventually I'm going to be right that the Johnson case is decided.
Can I just say that Andrew's prediction is much more exciting than our prediction, but
Come on. You guys are just saying there's going to be a decision. Who cares? I thought you were asking what's the next action.
Whatever you wanted to be the question is the question. So you answer the question you wanted to hear.
I went much bolder than you guys.
We were answering it like it's a Civ Pro exam. Right?
Really, I wanted extra credit.
I think Big Dom becomes the new face of the NFL. That's what I think happens next.
I like it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys. There are no sports law emergencies. I know that because my friends who are doctors and firefighters tell me all the time, you can't show up to dinner late because some emergency popped up. There's no real emergency in your world. But for us, this is about as close as it comes to an emergency. So I appreciate you, as always, jumping on and running this down quickly. There will be a lot more, obviously, to talk about. So we will break this down more and talk more about Big Dom and the NCAA. So thank you, guys, as always. Happy holidays if I don't talk to you before then. And I'll talk to you soon.
Likewise. Thanks. I think we could do emergency pods every week on this stuff.
And thank you all for listening. And thanks, as always, to my loyal sponsor, the Tulane Center for Sport. If you enjoy the podcast, please do me a favor and give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to it, and let your friends know about all the great stuff that you hear on this. Thanks again, and we will see you soon on Sportswise.